I just take the whole week off.
Yeah.
But I'm glad to be back, and thank you for having me here today.
Yeah, for sure. And of course, you know, you like to talk about, you know, like fauna and flora stuff around the area and that type of stuff. So what have you kind of got for us to tell the people today?
Sure. If you haven't, so for those that haven't listened to this program on a day where I've been here, just so you know, I like topics that are about pest management. So I like to talk diseases, insect pests. I like to talk weeds. Those are my favorite topics to talk about. And today we are going to talk insects because we are starting to see some insect pest issues popping up in the area. And then just as a reminder that, even though some of us, and I hope everybody was able to take some time off to celebrate Independence Day, but as you know, wherever you happen to be, whatever you happen to be doing, our crops are continuing on, as are the pests. And so that's why we're kind of getting back into the swing of things today with pests. One of the pest problems that has been pretty widespread this year is our foliage feeding caterpillars.
Okay.
So we have several research fields around the region. And looking at the fields, looking at fields of soybeans, you'll notice that individual plants will have a lot of the leaf tissue missing. And as we all know, that leaf tissue is really the engine. It is the machine that is working to take the sun's energy and use that energy to combine carbon dioxide and water to form sugars. Those sugars go to fill out pods in the case of soybeans, add flours, add pods, add beans into those pods, and then fill out those individual pods with that bean material. And eventually that's what we harvest as yield. And so when something compromises that leaf area, it's important to know what's causing the damage. So, at our research field here at the Northwest Research and Outreach Center, we have a cover crops field that was planted last fall. And this year we're collecting data in it. One thing that I noticed, oh, okay, they're starting to see some, I'm starting to see some leaf injury. Caused by some sort of chewing insect. And then it came down to, well, what the heck is causing it? Because I was spending a lot of quality time in that field, taking a look at the soybeans and rating disease symptoms, taking stand counts, that sort of thing. And yet I couldn't see anything. So I got out my trusty sweep net. Some farmers will have those. A lot of crop advisors will have those as well. It's just a net on a big long stick. And we use that. I mean, it sounds
Yes.
really high
So,
tech.
well, I was actually going to say the opposite. That's like
Right.
fun. You would expect it to be like some sort of like device that
Right.
sucks them in, but nope, just a net and they
Just
fly
a
into it.
net, right. And so what we do with that net is we basically draw it through the crop itself. We don't want to get a big net full of soil, so we're up above that, but we get down and into the crop and we're trying to see what the heck is there. And so doing that, I found green clover worm larvae. I could also see in the field there are thistle caterpillars that have migrated into some of our plots there. And I just recently wrote an article about this, and if you have an interest in reading about it, it's available on the Northwest or Cropping Issues in Northwest Minnesota blog. All you have to do is type in Cropping Issues NWMN and it'll be the first thing that pops up. So basically I found these caterpillars, which kind of matched the injury that I was seeing, just holes chewed in soybean leaves. And then I went about determining how much injury there actually was on the crop. So with any crop input, it needs to at least pay for itself in its ability to protect yield potential. So we don't want to have insect injury that's so high that we reduce our crop's yield potential. But we also don't want to apply an insecticide too early and then not have that pest population get high enough or the injury great enough to actually be worthwhile, make that insecticide application worthwhile.
So what exactly are the threats with these caterpillars?
Sure. So the threat there is just that it's going to be taking away that photosynthetic leaf area. And so we tend to, as a people, we tend to overestimate leaf injury symptoms because we're seeing something that's negatively impacting our crop. Unfortunately, though, when we overestimate leaf injury, that means that we are often applying an insecticide when one is not warranted. Mm-hmm. So entomologists over the years, so those are folks that study insects, spend a lot of time determining populations and leaf injury symptoms, and trying to figure out when those insecticide applications are worthwhile. They've developed something called action thresholds, and that's those action thresholds usually take place before there is lost yield potential. So the crop, especially soybean, can sustain a lot of injury without there being yield loss. And that's because the crop continues to put on leaves even after it started flowering. The crop can branch out also. And so it has a tremendous ability to compensate for some losses. And so that's why these folks spend so much time looking at our crops and determining at which point we should spray. Those treatment thresholds will tend to be at a point where yield loss hasn't yet taken place, but early enough so that you can get all of your ducks in a row. You can source your insecticide, either hire somebody else to apply it for you or get your sprayer in order to apply it yourself. So you have several days to make that application after the treatment threshold has been reached. And that time there is built into the treatment threshold.
So yeah, is using insecticide kind of the only way to deal with a threat like this, or?
Yes. So it's not as if we have, so with some diseases, for example, and even some insect pests, like soybean aphid, you can have resistant varieties. But for these caterpillars that are affecting our soybeans, no. Unfortunately, the only way to manage those is by using a well-timed insecticide. One thing that if it were a little bit more moist out, you know, if we had gotten a lot of very timely rains, one thing that is pretty neat is that sometimes nature does provide some natural pest control for us. There are actually some fungi out in the environment that are capable of causing disease on insects. So they're called entomopathogenic fungi. So big word, basically meaning that it's a fungus that kills insects. And so moist weather, you know, high humidity, plenty of rainfall, tend to favor those fungi. And so when they're present, they do a good job of helping to control our pest populations. We might still reach treatment thresholds, but it's important to go out and take a look and see what's happening with the crop, because maybe we have some of those natural enemies out there that are doing us a bit of a favor. Again, no farmer wants to apply something unless they absolutely need to apply it, because they're not running a charity and every single input costs money.
Yeah.
As does every trip across the field, you know, diesel, wear and tear on the equipment, et cetera. And so, they'll want to make sure that that's what, that they're seeing a significant injury and that that pest is still there. So you might see a whole heck of a lot of holes in your leaves. But if the pest isn't there, what are you managing?
So you're talking to me earlier, not only are you've noticed these caterpillars, but there are also some grasshoppers that you wanted to tell the people about?
Sure. So before we move on to grasshoppers, a best way to determine injury symptoms, one, you're going to be looking for injury throughout the entire canopy. So don't just look at the top of the plant, because a lot of times insects will want to eat the top of the plant. Look at the lower part of the plant, take a leaf, remove a leaf from the middle part of the plant and from the top part of the plant, and do that throughout the field. And then use that to estimate percentage leaf injury. Before flowering, you have to sustain 30% injury severity in order to reach treatment threshold. So right now, my crop hadn't reached threshold. It might yet. After we reach flowering, I'm sure most people's crops are there or beyond. You need 20% leaf injury severity in order to reach a treatment threshold. And on that article, if folks wanted to get some practice estimating leaf injury symptoms, they can go ahead and there's a website linked there where they can take a quiz that helps them to best estimate defoliation loss. And so you're with all of those leaves that you collect throughout the field, I mean, obviously don't just go to one part of the field because you're going to be treating the whole field. Figure out your average leaf injury, and then you can go from there. And again, make sure that the defoliating caterpillars are still there. Sure, so now we're getting on to grasshoppers. And especially with this dry weather, those fields of small grains, we have a lot of spring wheat around. So those spring wheat fields that hadn't gotten rain, a lot of them are kind of moving along as far as maturity is concerned. So as those dry down and die, you know what? Grasshoppers are losing a really good source of food for themselves, and they're going to go looking elsewhere. And so I cover corn and soybean. They could be going over into corn and soybean. That's typically when I would see them in my research trials, is especially closest to the field edge that has had a small grains crop adjacent. That's where I'll tend to see the grasshoppers. We do have action thresholds for grasshoppers as well. You know, unlike these caterpillars that don't move very quickly, grasshoppers, when you're trying to count them, they want to jump away from you.
I have a feeling that grasshoppers probably move at about 100 times the rate of caterpillars.
Right. So, one way to estimate the number of grasshoppers that there are is to basically, as you walk in your field, look ahead and try and isolate in your mind's eye like a 1 square foot area and see how many grasshoppers there are moving in that 1 square foot area. Do that at least 20 times throughout the field. And then what you'll do is calculate the average number of grasshoppers in those squares. So you take the total number of grasshoppers that you counted in all of the squares and divide by the total number of squares that you looked at, and then multiply that by 9. And that'll give you the grasshoppers per square yard. So on field margins, the treatment threshold is 21 to 40 grasshopper adults per square yard. Inside your field, it's much smaller. So it's 8 to 14 adult grasshoppers per square yard. You need a lot more nymphs. So If you haven't seen baby grasshoppers, they look just like adult grasshoppers, except they're small. They're actually, might I say it, cute. They're just,
they're kind of cute.
Yeah, they're yeah. small.
Little
and
tiny
they're,
guys.
You know, they just, as they get bigger, they tend to just, if you look, if you just spend the time and look at an adult grasshopper, they're kind of horrifying. I think so. But but so on the field margin, you need more of these little itty bitty nymphs to reach the treatment threshold. And so 50 to 75 on the leaf or the field margins, and inside the field it's 30 to 45 individuals. And so that's per square yard. And it's all of the grasshoppers total. So there's going to be multiple different kinds of grasshoppers most likely that you're seeing. And so that's for all grasshoppers. One last thing that I'd like to chat about is aphids.
Yep. I was just about to bring that up.
Okay, great. Yeah, we are on the same page, Cameron. So one thing that we haven't seen a whole lot of yet this year, although there are pockets here and there where they're starting to show up, is soybean aphid. So the last couple years, I haven't really heard of anybody, and obviously I don't talk to everybody throughout the northwestern part of the state, but the folks that I typically check in with periodically throughout the growing season, none of them applied an insecticide for treating soybean aphids. They didn't end up with threshold populations in their field, and so we've really lucked out in at least the last couple of years, since 2021, when it comes to soybean aphid. Where I typically first see soybean aphid is right near wooded areas. And that's because there's a bush, it's a kind of a common shrub called buckthorn, and that's where soybean aphid spends the winter. So adult female and male aphids will travel to buckthorn plants. They're not full-size trees, they're kind of halfway between a small shrub and a medium-sized shrub. But that's where they'll go to mate and lay eggs. And so that's where they spend the winter as eggs. During the spring, they'll start to hatch out. They'll spend some time on the buckthorn feeding, and then they'll make their way over to soybean fields. And so it's the closest soybean fields to wooded areas will be where you first see soybean aphids showing up. And so over here, for those folks that are familiar with Crookston, there's the natural history area on the UMC campus. And if there's a soybean field right outside of that soybean field is where I typically will first check for soybean aphid. But soybean aphids, they suck plant sap using a straw-like mouth part. You know, feeding injury can result in stunted plants, and most plants are vulnerable to injury during the early reproductive growth staging. So basically, between now and plant maturity, you're going to look at 30 plants, multiple areas of each field. Treatment threshold is 250 aphids per plant on more than 80% of plants, and that population is still increasing.
Well, so thank you very much, Angie Pelter. Caterpillars, grasshoppers, aphids, lots of stuff for people to look out for in this area. Thank you so much for coming on to Valley Talk, and hopefully we'll have you on here soon.
Sounds good. Thank you, Cameron.
Thank you very much. So that was your Valley Talk program for this Wednesday, July 5th.